welcome to today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for March 21st, 2024. I'm your reader, Erica Dubenbars. Here is our first story. Cascade boy with Down syndrome stays active with family and friends. 9-year-old Kaysen Felton does not let challenges prevent him from enjoying his daily life. By Elizabeth Kelsey. Kaysen Felton might have been holding a soccer ball, but he was hard at work practicing his basketball skills. The 9-year-old tossed a perfect shot across his family's Cascade garage, where his father, Chris Felton, caught the ball and threw it back. After a few more shots, Kaysen sat in a nearby chair and began bouncing the ball back and forth with Chris, laughing as the ball soared higher and higher. Kaysen has Down syndrome, a genetic disorder that causes developmental and intellectual delays. While that has created health challenges and obstacles for the Cascade Elementary School third grader, it does not prevent him from enjoying his daily life, whether he is playing sports with his dad, cheering on the Dubuque Fighting Saints hockey team, or eating his favorite foods of nachos and steak. It's been a journey we never expected, with the best tour guide we could ever ask for, said Kaysen's mother, Kat Felton. Everything is on his terms. Today marks World Down Syndrome Day. The Day of Recognition takes place on March 21st each year, a chronological reference to the third copy of the 21st chromosome shared by people with Down syndrome. Kat and Chris were not aware of Kaysen's diagnosis before his birth. None of the typical Down syndrome markers that often appear on ultrasound scans, such as a shortened neck with excess skin at the back, appeared during her pregnancy. However, soon after Kaysen was born, doctors were concerned about his white blood cell count, and he was taken by ambulance to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. There, he was diagnosed not only with Down syndrome, but also with acute myeloid leukemia, a cancer of the blood and bone marrow for which children with Down syndrome are at an increased risk. Everything went into a whirlwind after that, Kat said. After receiving multiple blood transfusions and platelet transfusions in his first few weeks of life, Kaysen has been in remission ever since. Heart defects are also common in babies with Down syndrome, and Kaysen was born with 3 holes in his heart. When he was 5, physicians were preparing for a surgery to address those holes when they realized Kaysen also had a vascularing, meaning his aorta was wrapped around the trachea and compressing it like a rubber band. As he grew, the condition could have choked Kaysen to death. After a surgery in 2019 to divide the ring, Kaysen since has graduated from cardiology. He has had several other surgeries and is now a healthy, active, and adventurous 9-year-old. Kaysen loves to spend time in the woods with his father, friends, and family, fishing and splitting wood. "He's the boss man," said Chris, turning to Kaysen. "What do you like to call out all the time?" "Break time," Kaysen said. Kaysen is also a passionate Fighting Saints fan and was the team's kid captain in 2023. "They announced my name on the microphone," Kaysen said proudly. Kat said Kaysen was motivated to learn his numbers in part because of the numbers on the Saint players' jerseys. Now, math is his favorite school subject. A common stereotype about people with Down syndrome is that they are always happy, but Kat said that is untrue. "He has his mood swings just like everybody else," she said. "But he's very optimistic and very sympathetic. He knows when he's wrong, and he will apologize." Kaysen is also a social butterfly with a wide array of acquaintances. He has participated in horseback riding at local nonprofit Inspiration Stables, and he attends Camp Courageous, a Monticello camp for people with disabilities. "Everywhere we go, from Dubuque to Cedar Rapids to Anamosa, there's someone that knows him," Kat said. The Felton family has been involved with Dubuque Area Down Syndrome Society, a group founded in 2011 by local residents Tammy March and Carla Riley to provide resources and support for people with Down syndrome and their families. Kristen Mayo of Piosta currently is vice president of Dubuque Area Down Syndrome Society. She said the nonprofit shares information and resources with families, including welcome bags for parents of young children with Down syndrome. "We're mainly here for support and awareness for any family receiving a prenatal or post-birth diagnosis of a child with Down syndrome," she said. "We want them to know there's other families out here." When people ask Kat Felton how they should act around Kaysen or others with Down syndrome, her answer is clear. "Treat them with the same respect you would show anyone else. You may have to shorten your sentences, and it might take them a little bit to comprehend and respond, but they like to be treated just like everybody else, she said. She turned to her son. What were you born with? She asked him. Down syndrome, Kaysen answered. Is that a good thing? She asked. Kaysen's reply was immediate and emphatic. Yes. End of story. Large donation gives boost to area childcare. John Deere Foundation pledges $600,000 to local collaborative's effort to add over 500 slots. By Grace Nealand. Initial funding allocations from a local collaborative are expected to increase capacity at Dubuque area childcare centers by more than 500 spots. Dubuque Initiatives, in collaboration with Greater Dubuque Development Corp., has allocated $621,816.86 toward a total of 16 Dubuque County child care centers to support recruitment of 141 additional staff members. The extra staffing will result in an additional capacity of 516 child care slots countywide, according to Dave Lyons, Strategic Initiatives Consultant for GDDC. What this funding really does is allow child care centers to staff up to licensed capacity, said Lyons, who also is acting as a project manager for Dubuque Initiatives. Many of our facilities are operating below licensed capacity due to low staffing. That's why those slots are there to fill. The allocations are the first in an anticipated three rounds of funding. The fund was kickstarted by a $560,000 state grant and since has grown to over $1.3 million in available dollars thanks to $780,000 in donations from area employers. A total of 11 employers have donated to the fund so far, but the largest contributor by far is John Deere Foundation, which recently pledged $600,000 to the initiative over the next 3 years. That's basically a challenge award, said GDDC President and CEO Rick Dickinson. It's not conditional upon a match, but their goal was to really encourage all employers in the Dubuque market to become similar champions for childcare. That donation and more will be announced today at a grand opening celebration for the Bright Minds campus at 7900 Chavanel Road. The building, which nonprofit Dubuque Initiatives purchased from Medline in 2022, is home to the new Dubuque Y Early Learning Center, which opened in January with initial capacity for 120 children. The building also will host Dubuque Community School District's new preschool center once it opens this fall. Between the addition of new facilities such as the Bright Minds campus and extra funding for existing centers, Lyons said, the goal is to take a broad approach toward the removal of childcare as access as a barrier to employment and wealth creation. According to a 2022 study commissioned by GDDC, locally available childcare slots severely lag behind demand. The result is that some parents are forced to leave the workforce to ensure their children are cared for, Dickinson said. In our community, your first call isn't to mom and dad to give them the good news that you're expecting. It's to a child care provider hoping you can get a slot for child care, Dickinson said. The waiting period far exceeds a year, and that just doesn't work for young couples trying to work. Of the 30 businesses interviewed for the study, 26 reported a barrier in availability of child care, and 13 specified the need for infant care. Other recorded deficiencies included a lack of early drop-off or late pickup options, as well as sick care. The goal of providing additional funding for existing centers is to address some of those issues by increasing overall capacity, as well as increasing wages and training opportunities for new and existing employees. Any licensed child care center in Dubuque County that accepts state money for child care is eligible to apply for a portion of the funds. To be considered, centers submit applications outlining how they would use the funds and how they plan to sustain those new positions or wages. The Child Care Solutions Fund is being administered in partnership with Exceptional Persons, Inc. and Child Care Resource and Referral of Northeast Iowa. Dubuque Initiatives and GDDC now seek to secure an additional $500,000 in donations to guarantee another 2 years of funding. After that, the hope is that centers will have identified ways to independently sustain newly funded positions or pay increases, said Kevin Lynch, board president for Dubuque Initiatives. This really is the result of people working together and creating partnership to solve what appears to be unsolvable, said Lynch. To incentivize private donations, area employers can secure one slot for an employee's child at the new Dubuque Y Child Care Center for every $5,000 donated until slots are filled. Once slots are filled, businesses will receive preference when an opening becomes available. Notably, John Deere waived its right to the slots that would have come with the foundation's $600,000 donation. Other local employers who have contributed to the initiative include Tyson Supply Company, Q Casino, the City of Dubuque, and more. Q Casino CEO Alex Dixon, who is also chair of GDDC's board of directors, said he has seen firsthand the importance of casino staff having childcare access. At times, he said, it can be the difference between a pregnancy announcement being a celebration or a resignation. By donating to the cause, Dixon said, the casino's goal is to see the availability and flexibility of care improve for area workers. As we look to be an employer of choice in the region, childcare assistance is just another tool in our tool belt to be able to ensure that there is the capacity to care for this community's children, he said. It supports our employees, but it also supports the broader community ecosystem. End of story. Iowa lawmakers split on plan to give landlords more authority. Bill would expand definition of rent, broadening landlords' powers in eviction process. By Benjamin Fisher. Republicans on an Iowa House of Representatives committee advanced a bill this week that would expand landlords' authority in their dealings with tenants, including broadening eviction powers. The bill would expand the definition of rent to include base rent, utilities, and late fees as an allowable reason a landlord can file for eviction. It would make tenants responsible for the legality of terms in lease agreements rather than landlords. The bill also would lengthen the time tenants can remain in rental units while still incurring past due charges before being evicted from 30 days to 90 days, which committee Democrats granted some merit, but also made Saturdays and Sundays count toward that total. Republican supporters of the bill on the House Ways and Means Committee, including Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, Republican from Piosta, said the bill would give landlords long-sought protections. Landlords have been asking for this bill for quite a while, she told the Telegraph Herald. We've done everything we can to always protect the consumer. But at some point, the consumer is overstepping their bounds, and now the business owner has to have protection. Iowa Representative Lindsey James, Democrat from Dubuque, said the bill would make rental regulations even more unbalanced in landlords' favor than they already are. This bill has been the landlord lobby's priority bill for the last 2 years and will really significantly harm folks who are trying to live their lives and stay in their homes, she told the Telegraph Herald. When tenants are reeling, when we're finally just getting back to a stable place in the state and the country post-COVID, that landlords would take advantage of trying to further erode tenant protection is really disheartening. During the Ways and Means Committee meeting, Iowa Representative Kenan Judge, Democrat from Waukee, said the bill would harm tenants in numerous ways. In regard to including base rent, utilities, and late fees to the definition of rent, it just adds more ways to evict someone, he said. Saturdays and Sundays counting toward peaceful possession time would take an eviction and make the cure time, the time they have to make it right with you, the tenant, and speed it up. Judge said he could understand how extending the peaceful possession period could help tenants, but said it could also leave them vulnerable to landlords. It could be used to drag somebody along, he said. It has been 30 days, and landlords can't hold anything else over tenants' heads for payment. Bill manager Iowa Representative Phil Thompson, Republican from Boone, said he was working on a floor amendment to the bill to address some of Judge's timeline concerns, but defended that measure and others in the bill. It will make a timeline that is a little more palatable to everybody, he said. But this will give landlords and tenants greater flexibility to resolve any disputes prior to the landlord filing for judicial eviction. Currently, this has to happen very quickly. The bill also codifies current case law, providing landlords can dispose of a tenant's personal property after a tenant has been evicted. James said the bill could be particularly harmful while eviction rates remain high after the end of a national eviction moratorium during the COVID-19 pandemic. We know that housing is one of the top social determinants of health, she said. We know that eviction rates in recent years were the highest they've ever been in Dubuque. We know that evictions across the country disproportionately affect Black single moms. According to data collected by Iowa Legal Aid, there were 401 evictions in Dubuque County in 2023, up from 338 in 2021. 31 evictions in Jackson County in 2023, up from 25 in 2021. 15 evictions in Delaware County in 2023, up from 9 in 2021. And 15 in Clayton County in 2023, up from 13 in 2021. Lundgren argued that landlords also have faced changing challenges in recent years. Used to be, squatters would come into abandoned properties and take over, and it was hard to get them out because of how the legal system works, she said, sharing information from landlords with whom she has spoken. Now, they're finding apartments that are empty, not abandoned, just not occupied at the time, and they're having issues with squatters there, too. The bill's expanded definition of rent applies to residents of manufactured home parks, many of whom own their homes but cannot move them from the land they lease. James and Lundgren have worked to expand protections for mobile home park residents in recent years, after residents of Table Mound manufactured home parks in Dubuque County said their rates and fees spiked after the parks were bought by an out-of-state company. James condemned their inclusion. Lundgren, though, said she did not think the measure was a problem for those residents. "I didn't get anybody from the area calling with grave concerns," Lundgren said. Iowa Representatives Lundgren and Craig Johnson, Republican from Independence, voted to advance the bill in committee, while Iowa Representative Chuck Eisenhardt, Democrat from Dubuque, voted against it. The bill is now qualified for debate on the House floor. End of story. Restaurant owner enters race for supervisor seat. Scott Nelson of Town Clock Pizza will face incumbent Harley Potthoff in Dubuque County's June 4th primary, by Andy Piper. Scott Nelson has a catchphrase to prevent any confusion among voters. Scott E. Nelson, I am running for everyone. Scott J. Nelson, as county attorney, is for justice. Nelson, a Republican who co-owns and operates Town Clock Pizza in Centralia, Iowa, with his wife Irene, has filed to run for Dubuque County Supervisor. He will face incumbent Republican Harley Potthoff in the June 4th primary election. Nelson has closely followed county budget discussions, and he believes his business experience is something he can bring to the table. "You have to have some common sense," Nelson said. "If I ran my business the way the county is run, I would have been out of business a long time ago." Nelson was a lifelong Dubuque resident before moving to rural Peosta in 2006. He perceives a difference in the way city and county residents, especially in a rapidly growing community like Peosta, view property taxes. He said that while property taxes are based on the average assessed property value, in a place like Peosta and its surrounding area, there aren't many homes in that median range. "The houses around here are all around $300,000 or above, and I think that's why property taxes get talked about more in this area. You pay more," Nelson said. "I have two neighbors that are retired and their homes are paid for, but in another 10 or 15 years, the way these property taxes are going up, they might not be able to stay in their homes," Nelson said. "It just seems like a really bad situation that is getting worse. I don't know that I can take it backwards, but I'd like to try to slow it down for at least a while." He is aware that changes mandated by the state are going to affect revenue at the county and municipal levels in coming years. He said the time to plan for that is now. "It would be good to go into that with a surplus rather than with a deficit," Nelson said. "With inflation and the cost of food and gas and everything, including going out to eat, you have to walk a tightrope. With the business, all of our costs have gone way up, but you can't necessarily pass it on to the customers or the taxpayers." Potthoff is a retired Dubuque County Sheriff's Department captain and was elected to the board in 2020. Potthoff said he has never been in a primary, but thinks his time on the board speaks well for itself. "I think we've done a good job as a board," Potthoff said. "It will be up to voters to decide. If he wins, good for him. If I win, I hope he doesn't get discouraged and runs again." Nelson said he knows he has his work cut out for him. "I am really trying to get people out to vote," Nelson said. "You hear complaints from people all the time, and then you ask, 'Did you vote?' And they say no. What difference does it make?" "Well, it doesn't if you don't vote. It's one of the most important things we can do as citizens." End of story. Dubuque Foundation celebrates contributions to public schools, by Elizabeth Kelsey. Crouching on the floor at Diamond Joe Casino in Dubuque on Wednesday evening, 13-year-old Amelia Arensdorf used a joystick to maneuver a robot. The Eleanor Roosevelt Middle School 7th grader and her classmates were putting the robot through its paces as part of a demonstration at the Foundation for Dubuque Public Schools' annual Enhancing Excellence fundraising event. Amelia's robotics team is among the organizations funded by the foundation, which supports projects and programs that go beyond Dubuque Community Schools' budget. "We wouldn't be able to operate without the Foundation for Dubuque Public Schools," said Roosevelt robotics coach Missy Sent. Representatives of other groups and projects that receive foundation funding, from high school brain health retreat room staff to the Lincoln Elementary School dance team, greeted event attendees as they arrived. Inside the casino's harbor room, orchestra students serenaded the crowd before presentations from foundation and district representatives began. Foundation Executive Director Chelsea Cox said since 2013, the foundation has donated more than $1.8 million to the district, including $273,209 toward programs and projects in 2023. "We're growing and sustaining, and we're able to look to the future and continue to make plans with Dubuque Community Schools," she said. Foundation Board President Lauren Cheshinsky touted the foundation's support of projects such as the district's Open Closet, which provided food and personal hygiene products to more than 700 students and their families in the past year. "There are wonderful things happening every day in the Dubuque Community School District, but we can't do it alone," said Superintendent Amy Hawkins. "Those of you in this room, and all those who support the Foundation for Dubuque Public Schools, make life-changing experiences possible for our students." The evening concluded with a Fund the Mission initiative, during which attendees were encouraged to make donations at various monetary levels. Cox said officials already had recorded over $50,000 in sponsorships ahead of the event, and they hoped to earn a total of $100,000 by the end of the night. End of story. And now for some brief news stories. Man pleads guilty to online threats against Dubuque employer. An Iowa man has pleaded guilty to a felony charge after police said he used social media to threaten a massacre at the offices of his former Dubuque employer. Scott J. Questad, 31, of Albia, Iowa, recently entered a guilty plea in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County to a charge of making threats of terrorism. A sentencing hearing is set for April 29th. Court documents state that officers responded January 22nd to Hirschbach Motor Lines, 2460 Kerper Boulevard, for a report of harassment. A Hirschbach official had requested that police respond to the business to stand by while the night shift employees went out to their vehicles after a threat was posted on a Facebook page, documents state. Investigators learned that Questad had been terminated by Hirschbach on January 11th, documents state. On January 22nd, Questad had posted two threats on a private Hirschbach group page on Facebook, documents state. The posts were made between 1 and 3 a.m. One post read, "Today is the day that it all begins. The day of my massacre shall begin. I have become death," documents state. The posts were made by an account listed as Joseph Questad. Photos of Joseph Questad on the Facebook page matched Scott J. Questad's Iowa driver's license photo, according to documents. Grassley to hold town hall meeting in Delaware County. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, will conduct a town hall meeting next week in Delaware County. Grassley will meet residents from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday, March 25th at the Delaware County Courthouse, 301 East Main Street, according to a press release. Grassley will take comments and answer questions. The event is part of Grassley's annual 99 county meetings. Lancaster Night Market seeks vendors. Lancaster Area Chamber of Commerce seeks vendors for its summer night market. The market will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on the second Tuesday of each month, from June through September in Ryland Park. Vendors are responsible for their own tables, chairs, and tents. This summer marks the market's second year of operations, and the chamber seeks vendors selling a variety of products, ranging from fresh fruits and vegetables to syrups, jellies, baked goods, and more. More information about the market and application information can be found online at lancasterwichamber.com. Vendor applications are due May 1st, though early registration is recommended to secure a spot. And now we're going to shift to the opinion section. Exploring Language of Demonization, Demagogues, and Dictators by Gerald Eagleson, professor emeritus at Loras College. Language is how humans communicate with each other. In this respect, it sets us apart from other animals. It is the main method that humans maintain social bonds within large groups. Through language, status, news, and emergencies are conveyed. The language used can be clear and concise, with important details to encourage understanding, or it can be incoherent and vague, promoting distrust and discord. George Orwell stated, "Political chaos is connected with the decay of language, and with language decay, truth decay soon ensues. Con artists, who want to separate us from our money or get us to vote against our best interests, will drown us with their pseudo-facts and conspiracy stories. Con artists will confidently masquerade as experts on topics they know little about. Vague but complicated conspiracy stories allow the listener, through the story's vagueness and open-endedness, to bend what they hear into what they want to hear, instead of what it is. Autocracies and language manipulation. When viewing how autocrats or dictators manipulate language, there are consistent patterns. 1. Vagueness with broad abstractions, avoiding the concrete details and facts that support their thesis. Example, the poor are poor because they are lazy. Use of tautologies. Example, indiscriminate immigration is incorrect because it is wrong. Bad metaphors. Example, the extremist pig will end with a crash if he flies. Lying and hyperbole. Hitler stated in 1942 that Napoleon fought in Russia at temperatures of -25 degrees Celsius, whereas he, Hitler, fought in World War I at temperatures of -45 and -52 degrees Celsius. Lying and hyperbole soon will reach the point whereby anything stated by the individual is meaningless and utterly ineffective at describing real conditions or what he might do as a leader. Authoritarian word games. The Orwellian 1984 trick of using words to mean the exact opposite of their real meaning was employed by Big Brother and other real dictators, such as Stalin and Hitler. Examples include, war is peace, ignorance is strength, freedom is slavery, insurrection is political discourse, and genocide is security. According to Big Brother, the term black-white has two meanings. When applied to an opponent, it means the habit of rudely claiming black is white. Applied to a party member, it means a loyal willingness of a party member to say black is white when party discipline and loyalty requires it. Evil euphemisms. All politicians play word games, but autocrats are particularly adept at completely avoiding the truth. Euphemisms are used to avoid bluntly referring to the truth or to lessen its impact. One such euphemism was developed during the Vietnam War. That was the term collateral damage, which refers to civilian deaths while pursuing Viet Cong or, in later words, suspected terrorists. Villages or large groups of women and children are indiscriminately slaughtered while searching for Viet Cong or suspected terrorists. Vladimir Putin has recently set another euphemism in motion. Within Ukraine, his Russian invasion has resulted in demolishing large cities and villages to rubble, with numerous civilian deaths. To blunt the impact on Russians, he insists that this invasion be called a special military operation. The Russo-American journalist Masha Gessen noted that Putin continually lies to assert power over truth itself. Putin likes to say what he wants, when he wants, regardless of facts. He is the president of his country and king of reality. We as voters are not obligated to join a party, but as civic members of a democracy, we're expected to separate the chaff from the facts when deciding upon our potential governmental representatives. We, with vigilance and virtue, must seek the truth about candidates. It's our civic duty. Voting is not a high school popularity contest with pep rallies and cheerleaders. No people will tamely surrender their liberties when knowledge is diffused and virtue preserved. On the contrary, when people are ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink under their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders. Quote from Samuel Adams in 1775. End of story. Now a brief letter to the editor from Wayne Collins. Stay in your lane, Dubuque drivers. Too many drivers in this town act like they are driving farm equipment. They swing wide, making left or right turns. At multi-lane intersections, left turns should be from the left lane to the left lane, right turns from right to right. That way, two cars can make their turns together. Yet today, I met a left turner that cut me off. I was turning right from Asbury to JFK. That made a wide turn to the right lane just because he wanted to turn right down the block. Sad to say, people like that will not see this letter. So we all have to be careful out there and watch out for the other guy. End of letter. You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Erica Dubin-Bars. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now, we'll turn to today's obituaries. Deborah A. Ruh, age 64, technically Sweet 16 of Dubuque, passed away peacefully at 5:31 p.m. on Monday, March 18th, 2024, at Stone Hill Health Center after a short battle with cancer. To honor Debbie's life, family and friends may visit from 4 p.m. until 7 p.m. on Friday, March 22nd, 2024, at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, where there will be a parish scripture service held at 3:45 p.m. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, March 23rd, 2024, at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Ghost Church, 2921 Central Avenue, with Reverend Jeff Friedan officiating. Entombment will be in the Mount Calvary Cemetery Mausoleum. Debbie was born on Leap Day, February 29, 1960, in Dubuque, Iowa, daughter of Donald and Lorraine Witt Hemming Sr. She attended Holy Ghost Grade School and graduated from Hempstead High School in Dubuque. She married the love of her life, Edward J. Ed Ruh, on May 28, 1983, at Holy Ghost Church. The couple had a wonderful life together and completed their family when they adopted their son Joe in 1989. Sadly, Ed passed away on February 2, 2020, shortly before their 37th wedding anniversary. She was a longtime member of Holy Ghost Church in Dubuque. Debbie was an extremely devoted wife and mom who loved to work. She worked in the Environmental Services Department at Stonehill Franciscan Services, retiring after 11 years, and also at Taco John's for many years. Her family was her greatest joy, and Debbie especially looked forward to seeing the grandchildren any chance she could. She loved spending time at the house in North Buena Vista, fishing and just enjoying nature. She was a fan of watching NCIS, Fire Country, and all the Chicago shows on TV, and rooting on the Green Bay Packers and Chicago Cubs. She also enjoyed quiet time doing word search puzzles. Everyone who knew her knew that Debbie loved her ice cream treats and chocolate milk. Debbie was a wonderful woman who made the world around her a better place. We will miss her tremendously. Those left to cherish Debbie's memory include her son, Joe Ruh, three grandchildren, Penelope, 10, Olive, 7, Holden, 3, Ruh, a brother, Don, Lynn Lippert, Hemming, Dubuque, Iowa. Her in-laws, John, Phyllis, Ruh, Marion, Iowa, and Francine, Fran, Fagan, from Dubuque, Iowa, and many nieces and nephews. Debbie was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, Ed Ruh, five sisters, Pat, Don, Freiberger, Kay, Pete, Splinter, Dot, Bob, Hentges, Judy, Tom, Hansen, and Sandy Hemming, a brother-in-law, Aaron Fagan, and a sister-in-law, Marie Ruh. Debbie's family would like to thank the nurses and staff of Stonehill and Hospice of Dubuque for their kind and compassionate care of Debbie these past weeks. The family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards and memorials in Debbie's memory, which may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, 52001. Attention, Debbie Ruh family. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.bearfuneralhome.com. George W. Hoppenjan, 75, of Keeler, Wisconsin, entered into the loving arms of the Lord on Monday, March 18, 2024. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 23, 2024, at Immaculate Conception Church in Keeler, with Reverend Bernard Rote and Reverend Joji Thurmal Reddy officiating. Burial will be in St. Rose of Lima Cemetery, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 22nd, and 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday at the Immaculate Conception Parish Center, where there will be a parish rosary service at 2:40 p.m. Friday. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City is serving on the family. George was a caring husband, father, grandfather, and friend. He was born on September 25th, 1948, to Paul and Zeta Grimm Hoppenjan. After graduating from University of Wisconsin-Platteville, George was drafted into the United States Army, serving as a military police officer, before being honorably discharged. Soon after, he met the love of his life, Joanne Hinderman, and they were married in 1975. George valued faith, family, hard work, and humor. As an active member of Immaculate Conception Parish and a fourth-degree Knight of Columbus number 765, he served God. George and Joanne loved camping and traveling, often partaking in religious pilgrimages. George was a loving father who supported his four children and glowed in the blessings of 13 grandchildren. Papa George was always good for a hug and a joke. He taught his sons how to play sports and cards. He enjoyed dancing with his daughters. He never missed a chance to take his family to a good car show or give his grandchildren a ride on his John Deere tractor. George had a great sense of humor. His quick wit allowed him to make friends wherever he went. He was a dedicated fan of the Packers, Brewers, and Badgers. His entire 38-year career was spent at John Deere. He was a dedicated member of the American Legion Post number 104 for 50 years, serving as commander, recruiting many members, and teaching students about patriotism. George is survived by his wife, Joanne Hoppenjan, Keeler, four children, Troy, Awa Hoppenjan, Hazel Green, Wisconsin, Ross, Erica Hoppenjan, Castle Rock, Colorado, Nina Benjamin Heinzen, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and Lindsay John Hageman, Dubuque, Iowa, and 13 grandchildren, Vincent and Walter Hoppenjan, Bryce and Madison Hoppenjan, Evelyn, Zoe, Esther, Magdalene, Maribel, and Zelly Heinzen, and Eloise, Judah, and Gemma Hageman. He was preceded in death by his parents. In lieu of flowers, a George W. Hoppenjan Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be sent to the funeral home at 123 North Jackson Street, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. The family wishes to thank the staffs of Stonehill Health Center and Hospice of Dubuque for their compassionate care of George. Online condolences for the family may be left at www.caseymcnett.com. Vernon Dan Daniel Shireman, 75, of Dubuque, Iowa, peacefully signed off for the last time at home with his family on March 19, 2024. Friends and family may visit from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday, March 22, 2024, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Dan was born on July 22, 1948, in Dubuque, Iowa, son of Vernon and Ruth Fiat Shireman. He graduated from high school and trade school for mechanics and electric forklifts. When living in Washington in the early 70s, Dan was an electric forklift mechanic. He moved to New Zealand in the early 80s, working many jobs including chimney sweeping, photography, landscaping, and raising calla lilies for export. Dan returned to Dubuque in the early 90s and settled into truck driving and developed a power wash business that he did until retirement. When Dan returned to Dubuque, he involved himself with Washington Neighborhood Center, assisting Andrea Sarose Schickles with the work. He and Andrea later married and they continued their mobile ministry. Dan became a member of the local amateur ham radio club and served as president for 2 years. Dan was always willing to climb a tower. Dan was passionate in his faith. He had a fine-tuned wit and was generous with his time and knowledge. Dan was very family-oriented and a trustworthy friend. He will truly be missed and remembered by all who knew him. Dan is survived by his siblings, A.T. Timothy Shireman of Vancouver, B.C., Canada, Regina Bruce Montgomery of Virginia, Linda Link of Dubuque, Verna Michael Barnett of Oregon, Evelyn, Evie, Jim, Small of Washington, stepdaughters Valerie, Brian, Lau, Jackie, Jim, Weiner, and Christy Vachel, all of Dubuque. He was preceded in death by his wife Andrea, his parents, and his sister Mary Ellen Shireman. A Vernon Daniel Shireman Memorial Fund has been established. KBO Clear. Lisa C. Krieg, 61, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on March 16, 2024, at home after a long and courageous battle with muscular dystrophy. According to Lisa's wishes, there will not be any services at this time. The burial will take place at Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. She was born on May 29, 1962, to Ralph Jr. and Alvera Wiederholt Kirchen. She married Mark Krieg on June 20, 1992. Lisa graduated from Weylert High School and worked at Mercy Hospital. She enjoyed singing in the choir at St. Columbkill's Church until her health worsened. She is survived by her husband, Mark, her son, Benjamin, of Des Moines, Iowa, and daughter, Heidi Zach Robertson, of Dubuque. Her mother, Alvera Kirchen Francis, siblings, Kevin, Kate, of New York, and Lynn, Randy, Chigfrey, of Columbus, Missouri. Nieces, Caitlin, Connor, Mary, and Dr. Lauren Chigfrey, and nephew, Noah Kirchen. Memorials may be sent in Lisa's name to Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory. Chester McCrath, of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, formerly of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away at the age of 95 on Monday evening, March 18, 2024, at Harmony Cedar Rapids. Bear's Funeral Home in Dubuque, Iowa, is assisting the family with arrangements. Chet's daughters will greet friends and family at Bear's, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa, on Friday, March 22nd, between 9:30 and 11 a.m. A private graveside service and burial will follow at St. Clement Cemetery. Surviving are three daughters, Tammy Allen Pearson of Cedar Rapids, Tanya George Aboud of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Mary Michael McGrath of Austin, Texas. Also surviving is Chester's sister, Coletta Schultz of Dubuque, Iowa, seven grandchildren and nine great-grandchildren. Chester was preceded in death by his parents, his former wife, Eunice McGrath, and two sons, Troy McGrath and Paris McGrath Capulet. Siblings and spouses, Vernon Eleanor McGrath, Anna Mae Albert Hoist, Ralph Bernadine McGrath, and Merlin Bud Schultz, all of Dubuque, also passed before Chet. The family would like to thank Chet's second family at Evergreen Estates, Harmony in Cedar Rapids, Mercy Medical Center, and the VA Clinic and Hospital for the care and compassion they provided in Chet's later years. For a complete obituary or to share a thought or memory, please visit www.bearfuneralhome.com. Edward P. Powers, 65, of Savannah, died on Saturday, March 9, 2024. Visitation will be held from noon to 1:45 p.m. Saturday, March 23rd, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah. Services will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Savannah. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Mary L. Schulte, 75, of Dubuque, died on Monday, March 18, 2024. Visitation will be held from 1 to 3:45 p.m., Sunday, March 24th, at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, where services will follow at 4 p.m. Burial will take place in Linwood Cemetery at a later date. Lisa M. Calms, 63, of Bellevue, died on Tuesday, March 19, 2024. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m., Monday, March 25th, at Hockman Mere Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue. And now for funeral services. Amy L. Bainbridge, Galena, Illinois, service noon, Saturday, April 13th, Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. David C. Floor, East Dubuque, Illinois, visitation 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. today, Miller Funeral Home. East Dubuque, Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. today, St. Mary's Church, East Dubuque. Joanne C. Garner, Dubuque, service 10 a.m. Friday, March 22nd, Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Barbara E. Gratz, Fenimore, Wisconsin, visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, Larson Funeral Home. Fenimore, and from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Friday, March 22nd, St. Peter Lutheran Church, Fenimore. Service 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Robin G. Groom, Dickeyville, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life, 2 p.m. Saturday, March 23rd, PJ's Pub, Keeler. William J. Kirstein, Dubuque. Service, 1 p.m. Saturday, March 23rd, Veterans Memorial Plaza. Celebration of life following service. Nancy's Slots, East Dubuque, Illinois. Delbert J. Clem, Bellevue, Iowa. Celebration of life, 5 to 8 p.m., Friday, March 22nd. Preston Town Hall. Rosemary E. Kunster, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation, 4 to 8 p.m. today. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Lancaster. And from 10 to 11 a.m., Friday, March 22nd, Lancaster United Methodist Church. Service, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Richard Marburger, Sabula, Iowa. Visitation, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. today. Calvary Lutheran Church, Sabula. Service, 10:30 a.m. today at the church. Mark A. Menson, Earlville, Iowa. Visitation, 9 to 10 a.m. today. Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Service, 10:30 a.m. today. St. Joseph Catholic Church. Louis J. Powell, Jr., Benton, Wisconsin. Service, 9 a.m. to noon, Saturday, March 23rd, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Sally A. Ritchie, Savannah, Illinois. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m., Friday, March 22nd, Law Jones Funeral Home, Savannah. Service, 10 a.m., Saturday, March 23rd, St. John the Baptist Catholic Church, Savannah. C. Patrick Smith, Dubuque, visitation 3 to 8 p.m., Friday, March 22nd, and after 9 a.m., Saturday, March 23rd, Rife Funeral Home, Epworth Prayer Service, 7:30 p.m., Friday at the funeral home. Service, 11 a.m., Saturday, St. Patrick's Catholic Church, Epworth. Stephen H. Sprink, Montfort, Wisconsin. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m., Friday, March 22nd, Soman Larson Funeral Home, Montfort. And from 9 to 10 a.m., Saturday, March 23rd, St. Thomas Catholic Church, Montfort. Memorial Mass, 10 a.m. Saturday at the church. There are also a couple of births to report on Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. Ben and Sarah Bell of Farley, Iowa, gave birth to a girl at Nudity Point Health Finley Hospital, Dubuque. Adam Arling and Megan Shager of Dickeyville, Wisconsin, had a boy at Southwest Health, Platteville. And now for sports. Fenimore poised for run at Swall Crown by Jim Leitner. Brent Scheckler believes this will be his best Fenimore High School baseball team yet. With experience back at every position and five returning all-Swall performers to pencil in his lineup, it's hard to argue with him. The Golden Eagles shared the Swall title last season with Cuba City, which graduated four all-conference performers. Here is a capsule look at the area teams in the Swall. Cuba City. Coach Steve Graber, 20th season, 199 to 184 overall. Last season, 21-7, 12-2 to share first in Swall. Returning letter winners, Tyson Richard, Jr., Braden Johill, Jr., Gavin Vassen, Jr., Talon Van Natta, Jr., Henry Cruiser, Jr., Andy Lofus Holtz, Jr. Promising newcomers, Ethan Abrath, Sr., Peyton Calvert, Sr., Elliot Cummins, Jr., Cameron Guler, freshman. Outlook. The Cubans return six letter winners, including first-team all-Swall pick Richard, who batted .375 last season, and honorable mention pick Johill, who hit .385. To contend for another Swall title this season, the Cubans will need to focus on defense and situational baseball. Cuba City has built a winning tradition, with a trip to state 2 years ago and a regional title and sectional runner-up finish in 2023. But this year, they must replace Swall MVP Reese Rosencrantz and all-league performers Riley Rosencrantz, Will Bush, and Max Lucy. Fenimore. Coach Brent Scheckler, 19th season, 221-177. Last season, 21-5, 12-2 to share first in Swall. Returning starters, Wyatt Anen, senior outfielder, Tyson Gerke, senior outfielder, Ethan Scheckler, junior catcher and pitcher, Tyson Starkey, junior infield and pitcher, McCoy Miles, junior, infielder, and pitcher. Casey Dressen, sophomore, pitcher and infielder. Other returning letter winners. Brock Henkel, junior, utility player and pitcher. Reese Amon, junior, outfielder. Corey Dressen, sophomore, utility player. Jude Kinney, sophomore, outfielder. Sean Janky Fielder, sophomore, infielder. Outlook. Brent Scheckler believes this could be one of the best teams the Golden Eagles have fielded during his tenure. Ethan Scheckler earned first-team All-Swall accolades a year ago, while Anen, Gehrke, Starkey, and Miles all earned honorable mention. Darlington. Coach Brad Solberg, ninth season. Last season, 12-10, 6-8, Swall. Returning letter winners, Braylon Goble, senior catcher, Gage Banfield, senior pitcher, Reagan Jackson, senior utility player, Maddox Goble, junior outfielder, Ty Crist, senior outfielder, Carson Mosley, senior utility player, Talon Crist, junior outfielder, Aiden Dempsey Strang, junior utility player. Promising newcomers, Zeke Zuberbuehler, Dante Glendening, Calum Crist. Outlook. The Redbirds returned two first-team All-Swall picks in Braylon Goble and Banfield, while Jackson landed honorable mention a year ago. Braylon Goble hit .536 with 5 homers and 28 RBIs last season. Banfield hit .508 with 22 RBIs, and Jackson hit .366 with 23 RBIs. Solberg has high. See Swall, page 3B. Expectations for the Redbirds, with experience at every position and pitching depth. Southwestern. Coach Adam Hutchins, first season. Last season, 4-19, 2-14, Swall. Returning starters. Brady Kerwin, senior, infield and pitcher. Clayton Hendricks, sophomore, pitcher and utility player. Drew Martin, sophomore, pitcher and utility player. Braden Gleason, sophomore, infielder, and pitcher. Miles Redfern, sophomore, pitcher, and utility player. Nick Bush, sophomore, outfield, and pitcher. Remy Lawrence, sophomore, infield, and pitcher. Cody McAuliffe, sophomore, infielder. Other returning letter winners. Wyatt Heights, junior, outfielder. Wyatt Cruz, junior, outfielder. Promising newcomers. Ben Sprague, sophomore, utility player. Sean Lutz, freshman utility player. Lucas Foley, freshman, pitcher and utility player. Carson Splinter, freshman, utility and pitcher. Jack Stevenson, freshman, utility and pitcher. Ashton Pitson, frontrunner, pitcher and utility. Wildcats playing in college. Jordan Stanton, UW-Platteville. Pearson Kephart, UW-Platteville. And Cade Buxton, Dakota Bottineau. Outlook. Hutchins takes over from Isaac Stanton, who spent 4 seasons at the helm and led the Wildcats to the 2021 state tournament. Southwestern will lean on a core group that played its best ball at the end of the season, but the Wildcats have several players with limited experience. End of story. And now we'll shift to lifestyle. The Music Pioneers, free concert to highlight Black female composers, by Michelle London. The music of two unsung Black female composers will take center stage at a concert hosted by Centrally Rooted, Northeast Iowa School of Music Executive Director Luke Tyler will be on piano, and Shelley Cooper, Associate Professor of Theater Arts at Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois, will be the vocalist as they present the music of Florence Price and Margaret Bonds. Despite being prolific musicians and composers in the first half of the 20th century, Price and Bonds both faced significant obstacles during their careers. "I have two handicaps," Price wrote in a letter to a fellow composer, "those of sex and race." Bonds, who was born in Chicago in 1913, was allowed to attend Northwestern University but couldn't live on campus or use the pool. Price, a biracial Southerner born in 1887, grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, as part of a prominent and well-respected family. When she left to attend Boston's New England Conservatory of Music, she passed as Mexican to avoid racial discrimination. When she returned to Little Rock, the city had become segregated and the family decided to move north. Price found her way to Chicago and became part of the Chicago Black Renaissance, a creative movement that blossomed on the city's south side. The movement included familiar names like Lorraine Hansberry, Gwendolyn Brooks, Richard Wright, Louis Armstrong, and Mahalia Jackson, among others. Bond's father, Monroe Majors, was a civil rights activist and author. He wrote what is considered the first black children's book, who mingled with the artists and musicians of the movement. Price became good friends with Estelle, Majors' wife and Bond's mother, and eventually took on the young Margaret as a piano student. Florence lived with Margaret for years after Florence got divorced from her abusive husband, Tyler said. Both of them went through divorces and leaving relationships. I think part of the reason for that was being a really strong woman in the early part of the 20th century. Bonds and Price both spent time in New York City. Bonds attended the Juilliard School of Music after graduating from Northwestern. Both women became associated with the Harlem Renaissance. Bonds met poet and author Langston Hughes, and they developed a close friendship. Bonds set many of his works to music, and some of them will be included in the concert. Both Bonds and Price had a close friendship with Marian Anderson, a classic contralto who became internationally known when in 1939 she was banned from singing to an integrated audience in Washington, D.C. because of the color of her skin. Instead, she performed on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, including Price's arrangement of My Soul's Been Anchored in the Lord, to a crowd of more than 75,000. The concert at Centrally Rooted will be interspersed with stories about Price and Bonds and their impact on the American musical landscape. The performance will last about an hour. This concert isn't just because these women are African American, Tyler said. It's also because they wrote important pieces of music, and the impact they had on not just music but civil rights and otherwise is pretty significant. This concert featuring the music of Florence Price and Margaret Bonds will take place at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 23rd, and the performers are pianist Luke Tyler, Ph.D., and vocalist Shelley Cooper. It will take place at Centrally Rooted at 2230 Central Avenue, and it is free to attend and no ticket is required. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. I'm your reader, Erica Dubenbars. Thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.